Welcome to Module 15, Medication and Drug Testing in Racing Animals. The reality is that this could probably be all semester in discussing these issues. So unfortunately, we are going to be able to just scratch the surface of a lot of these issues. First, a disclaimer. You have a lot of printouts. If you choose to print out what's in this module, you have something called the Uniform Classification Guidelines for Foreign Substances. The only part of that document that you really need to know and understand is the definition of what types of drugs are included in Class 1, Class 2, Class 3. The majority of this document are the actual drugs that fall into those categories. You will never be required to know exactly, if I name a drug, which class it's in. But if I would ask what kind of a drug would be a class 1, you would say a narcotic or a drug that has absolutely no business being in a racing animal. The rest of that section of the classification is just for your own interest. As you get to the end, there are some additional articles that explain some of the issues. So it will take quite a while to print that out. Okay, on to the lecture. The big picture, history. Testing in Europe with racing animals started in 1912, in the United States, not until 1932. Early on, there was a sample of saliva taken from the horse, and it was injected into a mouth. If the tail curled, the horse was deemed to have been drugged when he raced. Even today, many drugs react that same way. So even though we think that this was quite a crude method, it was probably more likely than not very, very effective. Really, the issue of having drugs present in racehorses came to the public light when Dancer's Image, the winner of the Kentucky Derby, came up with a positive for a drug named phenylbutazone in the 1968 Kentucky Derby. The horse was subsequently disqualified. There was a story in Sports Illustrated. There was a piece on 60 Minutes. And it was really a big issue in racing in those days. Today, bute, as it's commonly known, is commonly used and an accepted medication to be used on horses. Europe versus the United States were very, very different there. There is no race day medication permitted in Europe. In the United States, each state develops its own rules and regulations for race day medication. So even within the United States, each state, which we usually refer to as a racing jurisdiction, has its own specific sets of rules and regulations. Greyhounds, much more uniform in all the states. No medications are allowed to be given to greyhounds on race day. Although they deal with violations of medications, just like the equines do, but for a different reason. There are some different issues that have to be dealt with the greyhounds that we'll discuss further. Inconsistent from state to state. As I said a little earlier, each state has its own rules. For the most part now, every state that allows pari-mutuel racing allows bute and Lasix or Salix. It is exactly the same compound. It's just that a different drug company bought it out and they had to change the name a little bit. But each state does allow these two medications at different levels. So again, you have to be very sure of the rules and the regulations in the state in which you are participating. The absolute insurer concept. Someone has to be responsible, and that person is the trainer of the horse. If a horse comes up after his race with a positive drug test, it is the trainer's fault. And the trainer may say, I didn't do that. Someone else did that. It is the trainer's job to to ensure that the horse is protected and no one can get to the horse to treat him illegally, or that it's the trainer's responsibility to make sure that the feed is not contaminated and that any person working with the horse is not going to contaminate that horse. There are certainly mitigating circumstances for just about everything that might be able to happen. But the trainer is ultimately responsible. Are drugs medications or treatments? How does that sound to you? Certainly the connotation is not the same. Drugs, that tends to make people think that we're trying to cheat, we're trying to do something underhanded. Medications. Think about what you did or what you have this morning. Did you have a headache? You might have taken an aspirin, an ibuprofen. Did you have a Coke? You've got some caffeine. A cigarette? You've got nicotine. So if any of that's found in a horse, we call that a drug. If any of that's found in a person, we call it day-to-day life. There are really three categories of drugs or medication as they're presented. This is how they're broken up in the Idiot's Guide. There are some that are allowed but regulated on race day. That's the Butte and Lasix. There are therapeutics that are legitimately used in horses to keep them healthy. Some of these that are legitimately used will stay in the horse's system and show up as a positive long after their effect has diminished. We'll talk about those. And also, there are those that have no reason to ever be in a horse's system. They are not authorized for use in the horse and should never be found. There are five classes of drugs, class 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. California has expanded the RCI uniform drug classifications to 7. Although they have broken things down a little bit more, class 1 is always the worst, whether you go with the RCI or the California. Class 1 is always the drug that has no accepted use in horses, has the highest potential to affect performance, and these include DEA scheduled drugs, opiates, amphetamines, those that must always be kept behind lock and key. As we go down the classes, they still have a potential to affect the outcome of a race, but as we get to the lower classes, they have less potential to affect the outcome of the race, and they are more likely to be used as therapeutics and just for the general health, welfare, and well-being. The last class, whether it be the 5 or 7, are sometimes called the non-drugs. There are things called PEG, polyethylene glycol, and DMSO. These are things that you will find in many, many substances. Basically, it's the carrier. If you have a gel, let's say it's a leg liniment, and it's supposed to be cooling and make horses' legs feel better, many times the stuff, the gel part, has PEG in it. Now, in and of itself, PEG and even DMSO doesn't do anything, but it affects the ability of the lab to properly test for other items. These things are sometimes called masking agents and are illegal just because they make testing hard, not because they have any effect on the horse whatsoever themselves. Treatments, therapies, what's the difference? We talk about horses must not run with any foreign substance in their body on race day. What about vitamins? What about something called a milkshake, which is basically bicarbonate of soda, naturally found in horses, but found in higher concentration if you give them high doses artificially? Certainly, more is not better for a number of things, and racing regulation must deal with not only foreign substances being introduced to the horse, but natural substances being enhanced at a higher level. Allowed race day medications. One is bute, phenylbutazone. What is it? It's basically equated to being an aspirin. It reduces inflammation, and when inflammation is reduced, it reduces the soreness or the pain caused by the inflammation. That's what it does. That's how it works. When you start to see why it should be used, the people who think bute is okay to use and need it on race day, they're pro-arguments. It doesn't increase the speed of the horse. It fills fields with horses that are okay, just a little sore. Some days I, like you, probably wake up and have a little hitch in my get along and take a little aspirin. It won't mask severe pain. If a horse has a severe injury, bute is not a strong enough medication to mask that type of pain. And it lets horses stay competitive that would otherwise be retired. The people against the use of bute on race day point out that it does increase the risk of ulcers and anemia if overused in horses, and this has been scientifically proven. If a horse is sore, we shouldn't be giving it aspirin. We should let it rest until it feels better. One other argument is it increases bleeders. We'll talk about bleeders later, although this has not been proven. They will also say that it will increase breakdowns, increase injuries on the racetrack. That has not been proven either. One thing that has been seen is that the argument that it will increase the field size and keep more horses in the game has not come true. Field size has gotten smaller as the bute has been legalized in more and more racing jurisdictions. The other most commonly used race day medication is Lasix or Salix. Same thing, remember. What is it? It's a diuretic. Most human heart patients take it. It's probably you've probably heard of it, and it's very common in human medicine. What's it used to treat? It's used to treat EIPH. And for this class, that's good enough. In an exam, you can call it EIPH, or you can call it bleeder. The real word, the official word, is exercise-induced pulmonary hemorrhage. No one really knows why some horses bleed tremendously and others do not. It seems that we have an increasing number of bleeders at the racetrack, and in fact, almost all horses now can be designated as bleeders because an endoscope can be passed and we can see that there is some irritation and some blood in the passageways. 20 years ago, and even 10 years ago, very few horses were scoped, and the only time a horse would be designated as a bleeder is if they had this to the point where blood would actually trickle out their nose. What happens when horses are bleeding? Basically, their blood vessels rupture. And what happens is that Lasix or Salix reduces blood pressure and allows the blood to go through the capillaries more freely. The question is, does this affect a horse's performance? Sometimes this is a matter of semantics, sometimes not. So, for pro and con, affecting performance is the first thing. The issue is, does it allow a horse to run faster than it would normally under perfect health conditions? Or does the Salix allow the horse to breathe easier and just bring him up to his natural potential? You can see both sides of the issue. I'll go on with the list for pro. Keeps horses at the racetrack. There's been no evidence that bleeding is genetically based. So why not let the horses go with Lasix or Salix? It keeps them more comfortable, keeps them on the track. And it keeps horses valuable and keeps them at the races. The arguments against, for the same reason, the issue of enhancing performance. And also, it's not proven that bleeding is not genetically based. The Europeans believe that bleeders should not be allowed to race, and then, if they are not allowed to race, they do not have value as breeding animals, and hopefully they are selecting against animals that bleed. Unlike the United States, where many of our most famous horses have competed their entire career on bleeding medication. What about those drugs that are not permitted on race day, the Bute or the Lasix? Can we catch all the bad guys every day? All of those who are trying to cheat? No, we can't. We can catch a large percentage of them, though. Why? Because laboratories are getting so good that they can find very, very minute traces of very potent drugs. On the flip side, though, we cannot test for every drug every day. There are a lot of tests for drugs out there. It's economically prohibitive to test every horse for every drug we have a test for. It's just too expensive. There's not enough money. The other issue is that there are some drugs out there that there are not current tests for. And many drugs come on the market and become available prior to testing being developed for them. And this is not just in the animal world, but certainly in the human world too. What can the lab tell us? They can tell us if there was a drug found in a sample. They cannot tell us when that drug was administered, how much was administered, or where or by what route it was administered. So if a trainer comes up with a positive drug test, all the lab will state is that this substance was found in this horse's body at this amount. So what are some of the current dilemmas? Environment, contamination by food, air, people. For example, there are substances in feed and bedding, and there are some weeds that can cause a positive drug test. For example, Jimson weed was found in bedding. If horses ingest Jimson weed, they will get a positive for scopolamine. Another trainer has his feed custom milled. Unfortunately, the batch before his was pig feed, and there were a number of different substances in the pig feed that are not allowed in racehorses. The feed mill did not wash the mixers before doing his feed order, and this trainer came up with positive tests. Luckily, the racing jurisdiction listened to the mitigating circumstances, and it was proven that the trainer did everything within his power to protect those horses, and his penalty was very, very small. I talked about greyhounds not being allowed to race on any race day medications, but that they have a big issue with positives. What's up with that? Greyhounds at the racetrack are fed quite a bit of meat. The meat, as you might expect, is not your grade A prime T-bone that comes out of the grocery store, but is bought in wholesale lots and certainly is not... it's not the kind of thing that would be approved for human consumption. Much of the meat that the greyhounds get, when those animals were alive, they were probably sick or injured, and many of them had been treated with some sort of antibiotic, anti-inflammatory, or some other agent to keep them comfortable. If they got those injections close to the time they were slaughtered, those substances are still in the meat, and if the greyhound eats it, the greyhound will not be affected by it, but it will still come up with a positive test. Most of the positive tests in greyhound racing is for Bantamine, a drug that's very, very commonly used on animals going to slaughter. Lab effectiveness. Lab effectiveness has skyrocketed. Now the labs can find itsy-bitsy parts of very potent drugs, which is excellent, but they can also find itsy-bitsy parts of therapeutics that were given weeks and weeks ago. Certainly, if you took aspirin 2 weeks ago, its effect is long gone, but some labs are so effective they could in effect find still bits of that still in your system. Is that a positive drug test? No, it shouldn't be. The racing industry is trying to come up with a way to figure out how to balance research and development to say this is how long you would have to pull these drugs or medications so you don't get a positive. We know the effect is long gone, but how can we tell the labs to look at some things and not others? It's being realistic. What has happened in many jurisdictions is that decision levels have been created. That is a bar. Through research, a level is created and designated that above that bar, it will be called a positive test, and below that bar, there will be no action. This is the way that many jurisdictions are offsetting the issue that the labs are very, very good at what they do. Now, these decision levels are only for therapeutic drugs, drugs that are commonly used to treat common ailments in horses or just are used for routine maintenance to keep horses healthy. We're trying to keep horses from getting and trainers from getting positive tests when they have done the right thing for their horse, and just there is not a good amount of research to tell them when that drug clears the horse's system. For example, if a horse gets Tagamet, it stays in the system for 2 days. Ibuprofen, 2 days. But if you get penicillin G with procaine in it, you will get a positive for 7 days. That's just penicillin. But there's a little procaine in it because it needs to be there because of the injectable. The procaine has nothing to do with the penicillin, but it's there. So if you have a horse that just gets penicillin for a small infection, that horse is out for 17 days. The chain of custody. There's a very important chain of custody to ensure that if a horse comes up with a bad drug test, that it is proven that no one could tamper with the test. External chain of custody starts when the horse is identified at the paddock and ensures that the horse that ran in the race is indeed the horse that is entered. That horse will be watched and verified all through the race, and if it's one of the horses tested after the race, and in most jurisdictions, the winner is tested. Many jurisdictions, first and second, and others, maybe a first and second and a random, may be tested out of every race. Those horses are watched from the time they cross the finish line. They're untacked. They go back to the test barn, which is a highly regulated area. You must be only licensed personnel are available to go in there. The horse is again identified, and generally a person walks with that horse, a regulatory person, to make sure nobody tampers with it from the time it finishes the race and gets to the test barn. Witnesses watch the horse cooling out, the taking of the sample, the sealing of the sample, and the locking of the sample to go to the drug testing laboratory. Once it gets to the laboratory, there is an internal chain of custody taken up by the laboratory. There is no paperwork on that sample that says which horse it was or which race. It is totally blind. That way, no one can go in and tamper and say, well, I had the horse in the second race, pull that sample. None of that documentation goes with the specimen itself. Each sample is tested using a screening test. And that is a test that looks for anything suspicious, and there are a number of different tests that are done on every sample. Those samples that have a suspicious screening test will undergo further testing of a totally different type. And the totally different type means a different chemical reaction, a different system of doing the testing. This way, you can be assured that you didn't come up with a false positive, because each positive has been tested numerous times. To further protect the horseman, most jurisdictions have what's called a split sample. When the sample is taken at the test barn, half of it goes to the regulatory laboratory to be tested. The other half is held. If through all of the testing procedures at the primary lab a positive is found, the trainer has the ability to ask for the split to be sent to a different laboratory to be tested. In this way, every trainer and every judge and everyone involved in a positive drug case can be assured that that sample came from that horse and the testing procedure was done correctly.